What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? It is 3 o'clock. That means it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money. Boy, do we have a treat for you today. Fresh off of his testimony before the Senate Finance Committee, where basically the tax fight of 2025 has kicked off, we are so pleased to be joined by Bob Lord, who's the senior advisor for tax policy at the Patriotic Millionaires. He's been a tax lawyer for 30 years. He knows all the tricks, and he's helping the Patriotic Millionaires rewrite the tax code. They like to call it cracking the code. He's here to help us crack the code. And of course, Bob, Wisconsin's own Senator Ron Johnson was in the committee hearing today, shilling for corporations and billionaires, as he is wont to do. Welcome, Bob. It's great to have you back.
Thanks, Maggie. Great to be back. Yes, he was there.
Present company accepted. But I have used a phrase, mediocre middle-aged white guys failing up. Feels super appropriate for Senator Ron Johnson to me. Feels super appropriate. But let's actually talk about tax policy today. So before we get into the specifics, set up what it was like. What's it like to testify there? Is it super nerve-wracking? Do you script it all out? Who is basically, like, are there sides? Is there point, counterpoint? How did it work today?
Well, it was nerve-wracking, I guess, until I was maybe halfway through, because it was just something new. I'd seen a bunch of Senate Finance Committee and other committee hearings on television, but I'd never been sitting there at the table as the witness. So, yeah, it was a little nerve-wracking. Fortunately, the other witness for the Democrats had done this like 8 times before, and so he was there for guidance when I needed him. And it was this room has room for probably it's a sort of a semicircle of seats, yeah, for the senators themselves, and probably room for 10 on each side. But you never see that many filled at one time. I think the most seats I saw filled at any one time was 6 in the entire semicircle, maybe a couple of Dems and a couple of Republicans. Ron Wyden, the chair, was there pretty much the whole hearing, but the others were kind of floating in and out based on really when they wanted to talk.
It's one of those, I call it the C-SPAN effect. When you watch C-SPAN, if somebody's a political junkie, many of these hearings, you're like, oh, here's this witness testifying before the Senate committee, or here's this person on the floor of the House of Representatives giving this impassioned speech. But it's a little bit of a visual conceit, because sometimes it's not really a full house, which I just find really, really fascinating. But Ron Johnson was there. What did he have to say, Bob? Did he have much to say? Did he ask you any questions?
You know, the only question that I got from a Republican was from Ron Johnson. And, you know, he was basically, you know, let me set this up a little bit for you.
Please.
The other witness on our side was Indervar Dudagupta. He's with the Roosevelt Institute. And he was basically testifying about tax policy and the ultra rich from an economic standpoint. You know, if you raise their rates, what will be the economic effect? Whereas I was getting into the actual nitty gritty of the tax avoidance and how they're doing it.
Right.
The two witnesses on the other side, and I can't recall names. One was from NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, and one was from the Tax Foundation. And, you know, National Federation of Independent Business, they market themselves as being for small business, but I got to believe that there's some real big business behind it, because what they were fighting for was this so-called pass-through deduction, the qualified business income. And we all know that the benefits have been going largely to the rich. But if you heard the questions that were being asked and you heard their testimony, it was all about small business. And I forget, honestly, whether Ron Johnson was part of that. I'm pretty sure he was. And there were some obvious red herrings, and they need to be called out. And they need to be called out consistently. I heard how they need this tax break in order to pay their employees. Well,
you're talking about qualified business expense deductions. Is that what you're talking about? Okay. Please continue, Bob.
They need this deduction because they need to pay their employees, among other things. Well, you pay your employees out of pre-tax income. So it doesn't matter what kind of deduction you're getting because you're paying the employees before you're paying tax.
Right.
Then the other one I heard kind of along the same lines is, well, if this flow-through deduction isn't extended, they're going to raise prices. Well, if you're running a business, Maggie, you're raising prices in order to optimize your profit, right? And you're going to optimize your profit the same way you would no matter what the tax rate is, unless it's 100%, you maximize your pre-tax profit, not your post-tax profit. The tax rate just is what it is as far as that goes. So total red herrings. There's no way this qualified business income deduction, the flow-through deduction, impacts their pricing. No way it impacts how they handle their employees. But it was being sold as if it did. But my exchange with Ron Johnson was really interesting. The focus of my exchange was on the buy, borrow, die strategy and what they call the step up in basis at death, where, you know, you're an ultra rich American, you have $500 million of wealth, and $300 million of it is gains on assets that you're still holding when you die that's never been taxed. And he wanted me to verify for him that we need that stepped up basis for these super, super rich people, because it would be double taxation if they didn't get that. It would be because they'd have to pay the estate tax and the income tax.
But it's not.
Of course it's not. They're two completely different taxes.
Yes.
I said, like, it's no more double taxation than if I get income taxes taken out of my paycheck and I go to the store and I pay sales tax. That's not double taxation.
I would argue, Bob, isn't it even like less bad than that? So I had a discussion with someone about this yesterday, right? The dollar that is invested, right? The dollar that you pay to buy the thing, that's what, then the basis for that asset is a dollar. It grows a dollar in value. That new dollar of value growth has never been taxed. So when basis is stepped up to the now $2 value of the asset at death, the dollar has never been taxed. It's a newly created dollar. Or am I getting that wrong?
No. It hasn't been income taxed.
Correct.
But his point is that if someone has estate tax to pay, and they have income tax to pay before they get to the estate tax, that's double taxation. Well, by that rationale, the income that they made when they were, 17 years old working at a fast food store would be double taxed if they wound up dying a rich person and were subject to estate tax. It makes no sense. But what occurred to me afterwards was how cynical it was on his part, because he's a real estate guy.
Yeah.
Maggie, think about what happens with real estate people. They die. They have, say, $100 million worth of real estate. The cost basis is next to nothing because they've been claiming depreciation deductions.
Yes.
They've got $75 million of debt to which that real estate is subject. So their estate is only $25 million. Well, that's what a married couple can pass tax-free. So there's no estate tax. They've taken all these depreciation deductions. $95 million of gain just gets wiped out with this stepped up in basis. And then the kids inherit it. They start taking the depreciation deductions all over again.
So, Bob, I want you to explain that again really slowly, because this is one of the, I did not maintain a poker face when a colleague of mine a couple days ago said to me, well, no. Rich people pay plenty of tax. And I was like, you have no idea what you're talking about. So explain it one more time. They own real estate. they effectively borrow against it and keep going through the tax consequences and the tools that are used to basically avoid taxing, get, paying taxes ever on a lot of this stuff.
Right. Well, and by the way, I should throw in here, there's a companion strategy to buy, borrow, die called swap till you drop.
Yes.
And the way that works is you start out with one piece of real estate and it grows in value, and then you sell it and buy another one. And as long as you buy the second one within 6 months of when you sell the first one, you can make it for tax purposes as something called a tax-free exchange. And you don't have to pay tax on the gain. So you buy a, you know, you start out relatively small, you buy a building for $1 million. And a couple of years later, you sell it for $2 million. Now you have a, now you have more money for a down payment. You buy another building for $5 million. It's a like-kind exchange, so you're not paying any tax. And then, you know, a couple of years later, you're buying one for $25 million. And then by the time you die, you're sitting there with $500 million worth of real estate, and you've never paid any tax, right?
Yep.
So there's all the gain from the appreciation in the real estate, but then there's a second amount of gain. And what that is you're claiming these depreciation deductions, which are kind of fiction. You're taking these deductions because for tax purposes, the real estate is assumed to be decreasing in value. Most of the time, it's
really
increasing.
Which is really insane. Hang on, Bob. We got to take care of some. We got to pay some of our bills here. We actually pay our bills here on the Civic Media Radio Network. But we're going to take it back up where Bob was explaining they depreciate real estate. But we all know that's a hallucination. That's total fiction. Doesn't make any damn sense. We're talking about how the rich game the system to not really pay much tax, the tax avoidance strategies of the ultra-wealthy with Bob Lord. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 3 o'clock, so we're talking money, money, money. And beyond, it's the 3 o'clock hour. So here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, we are talking about money. Today, our special guest is Bob Lord. Guy's been a tax lawyer for 30 years and is helping us understand how the ultra wealthy avoid paying taxes. There's a couple of key strategies. We've been talking about them. One of the key strategies is real estate acquisition. Bob, you were explaining how there is this fiction that real estate depreciates. Tell us more.
Well, yeah, it's a fiction. There's an assumption that the real estate is going to reduce in value. So real estate owners are allowed a deduction where it can offset other income and eliminate the tax on that income while the real estate is going up. By the way, sometimes it's even more of a fiction because there can be a lender who has a lien on the property and has something called a non-recourse loan where only the property can pay the loan. And the depreciation, the risk, even if it is real depreciation, it's not the building owner that suffers the economic consequence. It's the lender. But the building owner still gets the tax benefit. So you have that going on while they're just continuing to hold real estate, maybe doing like-kind exchanges, and then finally they die. And real estate holders almost always are working off of debt. It's rare that you have someone with $500 million worth of real estate and no debt. So they die. Well, their estate tax is only on the net value. So the debt could reduce it to something that's really not very much tax to pay. Meanwhile, all this gain, the real economic gain plus the recapture of those depreciation deductions, all of that just gets wiped clean with this step up in basis rule.
Yeah.
And what I realized afterwards is that Ron Johnson knows this world. This is the world he lives in. It was so cynical for him to ask me that because he knew better.
Oh, he absolutely knows better. Let's listen to the question, Brian. My fantastic producer, Brian Kelly, found the question from your hearing at the Senate's Finance Committee earlier today. Let's take a listen to Ron Johnson's cynicism on florid display this morning.
Because I've got a noon meeting and apologize I haven't been here for the full time because this is an incredibly important hearing. Let me state at the outset, I think growing income inequality is a real problem. It truly is. I think we all have to recognize that. Also, I think what's undeniable is our tax code is a grotesque and complex monstrosity. And I guess I come at this from the standpoint, if we were to simplify and rationalize it, we could fix an awful lot of these things. And the example I'll use is, I know the chairman would like to tax unrealizable gains, which I think violates a basic tenet of taxation, wherewithal to pay. There's another way of addressing this, though. One of the problems is about 73% of corporate income is never double taxed. It builds up inside these corporations. I think it distorts our M&A market. So what I've suggested is, why not treat the 5% of American businesses that are C corps like we do 95% of other businesses and tax the business income every year at the ownership level? I know C corps would scream, but it would go a long way toward addressing that particular problem. I've presented that to my colleagues. It's a way of simplifying it. Another problem we have is capital gains tax. It's just an arbitrary number. It really makes no sense. I mean, what's trying to address the fact that it's unfair to tax inflationary gains, correct? So why not just index out the inflationary gains? It's very easy to do, and then tax that at ordinary rates. Now, I just think it's bizarre that we have different levels of taxation for different types of income. From my standpoint, income is income. So that's the direction we ought to move our tax code toward, simplify, rationalize it. Like I said, it's a rational thought to say income is income. You only tax income when you have the wherewithal to pay. If you base things on certain principles, I think that'd go a long way toward fixing things. I did want to ask Mr. Gupta and Mr. Lord, I think both of you complained about stepped-up basis, but isn't it true that stepped-up basis is applied to assets that are subject to gift and estate tax? So if you were to start taxing the stepped-up basis, you're double-taxing that. Again, I realize there's certain assets that are not subject to, because they're exempt, you have the personal exemption. But beyond that, it'd be grossly unfair to provide a gift or estate tax, and then on top of that, tax the gain. Would you not agree with that?
Senator, I would.
There's so much there. This is Ron Johnson doing Ron Johnson, sort of at his finest. Boy, did I just hear Senator Johnson say that we should tax all income at the same rate? Super. Let's just crank up that capital gains tax then, Senator. I mean, what? Bob, at the base here, the major loopholes that we're talking about are stepped up basis, this concept that rich people can effectively borrow against their assets, which reduces their income. It's the buy, borrow, die tactic. And then, of course, this like-kind exchanges where real estate transactions effectively create a massive tax loophole. We've been talking about flow-through deductions. What do you think is the single most effective tax reform that people should be asking the candidates that they're considering to endorse to help make our tax code more fair? And I realize that it's hard to boil it down to just one thing, but if we could do one, maybe I'll give you two things that we could do to make the tax code more fair if we implemented them.
So one thing I would do is close the loopholes we know about where they're just not serving any purpose. And though that discussion, it could be a little bit boring, let's not get into that part of it, but there's known loopholes, there's known fixes to them, get those done. The second is we have to tax the growth in wealth for what it is. It's true economic income. And I'll give you an example. If I hold an asset that gets 10% more valuable every year, grows at a 10% rate. And for a billionaire, that kind of thing is not unheard of.
Right.
Hard for you and I to get a 10% increase in value every year. Not so hard when you have enough money to go into venture capital funds and be an angel investor and that kind of thing. So you have an asset, you've held it for 30 years and it's grown 10% per year. And at the very end, you sell it. And let's say you're not even going to die and avoid the gain. Let's say you sell it. And all that gain is taxed at 23.4%, okay? That's equivalent economically. You would have come out in the same place if each year your gain were taxed at only a 10% rate. So effectively, we're taxing these people. If it's an annual tax, like your tax is annual, your income tax is annual, my income tax is annual. If you did their taxation annually, it would be a 10% rate. So we would have the richest people in the country paying tax on their economic income at a 10% rate.
And that's if they don't dodge the tax by dying
and letting
it pass. Bob, we've got to leave it there. I know you will be back for this segment. It's been a wonderful 30 minutes of Maggie and the Millionaires talking money. We're going to put taxtherich.com where you can check out how all of this works in detail. It's a 15-minute video. Go check it out, taxtherich.com. We'll put that in our show blurb. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Actress Kate Walsh is next.
So Obamacare is still in place, and we've doubled the debt. I don't feel like my time here has been particularly successful.